And this thing that I was so excited about doing, I was now gonna have to do on my own.
Tommy, I went to the doctor today. They gave me some bad news. They found cancer in my lungs and they said it's spreading.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoops Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Henkin, and with me today continues to be my ride or die, my love in this life, Erin Henkin.
That's how she wakes me up every morning with that song. Jessica, it's lovely to be with you. Listeners, good to be with you. And we've got a pretty good theme this week. I can relate to this theme, mothers and sons,
yes.
The theme of this week's podcast.
Yep, it's in celebration of Mother's Day. And
happy Mother's Day to you, by the way. You're the mother of two children of ours.
That's true. I did. I birthed those children. And you do you remember you had a lot of paternal anxiety early on? You were worried that neither was your own.
I still wonder, often. But it just doesn't bother me anymore.
It was a weird thing, like, because it just I just hadn't thought that that could be an anxiety. But that's because they had grown in my belly for 9 months. So it was like, no question, they were mine.
They were definitely yours and continue to be.
All right. So that's not what today's podcast is about, though. This episode has two stories about the singular love between mothers and sons. And there's no question. I adore Charlie so much. Charlie's our son. He's a good boy. He's the best boy. And I love him so much. But I don't know if he realizes that. I think that's like an interesting aspect of mothers and sons dynamic. I don't know if you guys can, you know, understand the love.
Well, you know, I think if you're doing it right, sons probably don't consciously, you know, appreciate it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's the right way to say that. And I'll go with that.
I certainly never appreciated my mother.
Erin and I both we've lost our moms, and that's hard, but you know, but that's not also what this episode is about. This episode is about these two really, really touching stories that were shared a couple years ago for a Mother's Day themed stoop that we had at the Whitehall Mill. It was such a pretty location, too.
Yeah.
So this...
You've arranged this episode well, because one is a story from a mom.
Yeah.
And one is a story from a son.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Who are we going to hear from first?
Okay, the first story is from Aselika Smith, who is just one of the most lovely human beings I've been graced to know in this life. She is a techie person and a great mother and great friend and just incredible lifelong learner. She does our website, the Stoop Storytelling Series website. And this is the story of her journey to motherhood. Take a listen.
For as long as I can remember, I've wanted to be a mom. I'm not entirely certain where the desire came from. I think those weird Baby Alive dolls had something to do with it when I was little. But for as long as I can remember, I've wanted to be a mother. I was one of those girls, as many young girls are, who had a plan for the trajectory of my life. I was going to be married at 25. My partner and I would wait a couple of years, obviously, and then we would have children, and my life as a mother would begin. Well, 25 came and went. My late 20s came and went. My early 30s came and went. But then I met someone, and I knew that I wanted to have children. I knew that he knew that he also wanted more children, and we got pregnant. And I was elated. I was so excited. I downloaded like 6 or 7 of those baby apps, the ones that tell you your baby's the size of a walnut or the size of a grapefruit or your baby has fingernails or a heartbeat. And I ate it up every single week. I was checking in constantly to see what was the latest development, what was the newest thing, what's going on. I wanted as much information as I could get. The apps were serving me all of these articles about sleep training and the different types of poop that babies have, and I wanted to know everything. And I felt very informed and prepared, and I was so ready. But I was not prepared when, around my 7th month of pregnancy, my partner left and my relationship ended. And this thing that I was so excited about doing, I was now going to have to do on my own. I think more than anything, I was hurt and disappointed and ashamed. I felt like I had already failed my unborn son, and I was worried somehow that all of that hurt that I felt would transfer to him, that somehow he would be born sick and sad and unable to face the world that he was born into. And so I did the only thing that I could do, which was keep going. I put one foot in front of the other. I gathered all of my baby information articles, and I used them to the best of my ability to care for my son once he was born. I kept up with his developmental milestones. I was very diligent about making sure he was doing all the things at the right time. Didn't always turn out that way, but you know, he was mostly on track, and I was happy about that. I went to the doctor's appointments and asked a million questions about, you know, what he should be doing or what I should be doing. I took very seriously an article that I read about language development that says that the sheer number of words that you speak to a child affects how much language they acquire. So I spoke to my son all the time. I literally narrated everything I was doing from the time that he was a baby. This is, you know, we're walking to the refrigerator. This is our neighborhood. These are our neighbor's houses. Literally narrated our entire lives together. So as he started to grow, I felt like, you know, my hard work had started to pay off when he started talking. And around 10 months or so, he not only, you know, at first there was the baby babbles, but around 10 months, he started to mimic me very specifically. He started to say, "Oh my God." Exactly like that, because that's how I say it. But it really started to sink in that he would be all right. Not long ago when we went to the playground, he's 2 now, and he was on a play set, and he's at the top of the play set, and there's a little set of stairs, like 3 stairs, and there's a little girl who's there, who's maybe 1.5, so not much younger than my son, but younger, and she's at the bottom of the stairs, and she's not really sure that she wants to go up. You can see that she's hesitating, and my son, my 2-year-old son, looks at her and says, "Come on, baby. You can do it, baby. Try it, baby." And I realized whatever I felt that I had done wrong, or whatever mistakes that I made, or, you know, whatever I thought I was, you know, failing at or didn't do well, he is fine. If he can go out into the world as a 2-year-old and encourage another child, I think he's gonna be okay. But I saw him in that moment, and I realized that if I want him to be his best self, the best way that I can do that is to be my best self in front of him. Thank you.
So Aselika's son, Love, has been to several Stoops now. He's so sweet. And she brings him. He's like 4 years old, and he just hangs.
I know. Adorable kid. Yeah. We can't get our kids to come see the Stoop to save our life.
Yeah, that's true. They've each only been to one.
Yeah. Probably before they, you know, could, you know, have the power to resist.
Well, you know, I think it's probably cringy for them to see us in that element, don't you think? It's like
it's
weird.
It's cringy for them to see us in any element or context at this point in their lives.
I know. So when I was growing up, my dad was in a lot of community theater, and which I guess goes without saying, is cringy. Like, it's just inherently cringy. And it's great. I think any theater is important. But I do remember actively, like, hating watching him perform, because it just was so odd to see your parent in this very different context. So,
but now he's a special VIP guest of honor when he comes to see The Stoop and sees you on stage.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't find me cringy. He just loves me so much.
This is not a story about fathers and daughters, this episode. This episode is about mothers and sons, I will remind you. And we've heard from a mom this episode, Aselika, and we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with a story from a son right after this.
This next story is from someone who has told several excellent stories on the Stoop stage. He is the managing director for the Baltimore Improv Group. That's how I know him, is through improv. He has had this incredible career.
He helped to run a nuclear submarine at one point.
Yep. He worked for Kamala Harris. He has traveled the world. He's got an incredible wife who's also shared a story. And he
is an incredible storyteller, Thomas is.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And this one is no exception.
Absolutely. And he discloses a lot. It's there's parts of it that are more difficult than others, but just, persevere and take a listen to Thomas Dodstree's story about his mom.
Tommy, this is Mommy. Pushing 40, and she would still say this every time like I didn't know her voice. Tommy, I went to the doctor today. They gave me some bad news. They found cancer in my lungs, and they said it's spreading. That hit like a ton of bricks. I try to ask some questions, but she seizes control of the conversation, and she says, I saw pictures of you with the crew of your submarine. It seems like they like you. Yeah, Mom. I saw you on TV with the senator. Seems like you're doing good. I'm trying, Mom. And then she turns, and she calls to my grandmother in the background, and she says with the most pride and joy I've ever heard in her voice in my entire life, we did good, Mom. We raised him right. Well, that hit like a ton of feathers. Now, what I mean by that is the words, we raised you right, don't have the same edge and heft as, son, I have cancer. That's clearly a brick. In fact, the words, I raised you right, are light, airy, and beautiful, like a feather. But my mom and I had a very complicated relationship. First of all, this is the first time we had spoken in a couple of years. In our previous conversation, I had learned that she hadn't been honest with me for my entire life about who my biological father was. And when I asked about it, she seized control of the conversation, shut it down, and we didn't speak for a while. She also had some mental health issues. She had something called schizoaffective disorder, which, if you're not familiar, I'll use an analogy. Have you ever heard of the genre of music rap rock? So like Rage Against the Machine, Limp Bizkit being the greats of that genre. So imagine that the paranoia and hallucinations of schizophrenia team up with the mood instability of bipolar disorder to create the Limp Bizkit of mental disease. My childhood was spicy. And because of that, I basically functioned as the adult in our relationship from the time that I was 10. I made decisions. I lived with the weight of those decisions if they went wrong. I determined how things were going to go in our life, which did not always work out well. And so for her to say that she raised me right, while the words themselves are beautiful and light, they took the air out of me, because whether it's a feather or a brick, a ton is a ton. But I let her have it, right? She was sick, and who was I to take this away from her? It gave her joy, it gave her something to hold on to. And so I didn't say anything, I just let it ride. And so in the coming months, I got to know my mom in a way that I had never known her before. She was a fighter. She drove herself to her treatment appointments, would send me videos of her ringing the chemo bell with a huge smile on her face, and she went into remission and it came back because it was very aggressive, but she kept doing so until her condition had progressed to the point where we had to take her car. from her. We couldn't let her drive anymore because tumors in her brain were impacting her vision. But she fought aggressively even when there didn't seem to be hope. She had a better attitude about all of this than any of us. She would joke all the time. When the treatment took her hair, I would go and sit with her, and she would hold my head close to hers and put her forehead to mine, and she'd say, "We bald, baby." And then she would say, "Thomas, get back." I'm like, "What? What's going on?" She's like, I don't want the tumor to pop my eye out on you. It's like, "Mom, you can't say that. It's my tumor. I'll say what the hell I want." Can't argue with that. We also had inside jokes. My entire life, she had a thing for country western types. So Little Joe from Bonanza, who was Michael Landon, if you recall, young Clint Eastwood, and most strongly, Sam Elliott at any phase in his life. And if you don't know who Sam Elliott is, I don't believe you. He is the sexiest man on earth. I will not be taking any questions on that. And so every time I talked to her, she would say, "Tommy, you talk to Sam Elliott?" "Nah, he's not talking to me right now, Mom." "Well, you tell that sexy motherfucker to call me when you talk to him." "All right, Mom, I'll tell him." She was able to find joy even when there didn't seem to be any hope. She was curious about the world in a way I hadn't seen before. She would drive out to the city for her treatment. She would stop at this international food market and start buying ingredients for that she had no plan for. And so she'd buy sambal paste and sesame oil and Indonesian sweet soy sauce called kecap manis. And then she'd go on TikTok and try to find recipes that she could use them for. She started asking me about my work, which she had never done for years. She thought I was in the Army. And she'd ask, "Tommy, how do you make water on a submarine?" "We use a process called reverse osmosis, Ma." "Oh, well, what's reverse osmosis?" "It's the same process they use to make Dasani water." "Okay. What's the distinction between escalate to de-escalate and escalation control as it applies to nuclear weapon policy?" "Mom, what part of TikTok are you on right now?" But she was wanting to learn more about the world, even though there was little hope that she would continue to be in it for much longer. She wanted to apologize for things. She wanted me to apologize for my stepmother for any tension that she had created between the two of them, which was a lot. She apologized to me and my sister for different things along the years, decisions that led to us being homeless for an extended period of time. She stopped taking her medication at some point, and that got us kicked out of a few shelters. And she wanted to make peace with those things. She wanted to be a better person, even though there wasn't a lot of hope for how much longer she would be able to be a person. And so in that time, I watched her be a person that I wanted to be. And then my phone rings. "Tommy, this is Mommy." "No shit, Mom." "Went to the doctors today. They say there's nothing else that they can do. They're putting me in hospice." There goes that ton of bricks again. And so at this point, I've got a go bag. I grab my bag. I drive down to Virginia the next day. I sit down with her. And we're going over hospice paperwork. If you've never done it, I don't wish it on you. And she pushes the paper down onto a table, and she says, "Tommy, I want to apologize to you. I'm sorry I couldn't be a normal mom like everyone else." I said, "Mom, I don't want you to think about that. It's in the past. Don't worry about it." And she said, "No, I want to address this. I'm sorry. But I realized when you were young that you were different. And I realized that the best thing that I could do for you was stay out of your way. And a lot of times I let you make the decisions because you were usually right and you could handle it. I felt a feather fall on my head because I realized that in that decision, every success I had ever had was predicated upon that. My ability to take risks, make decisions, live with the failure, stand up to people, speak truth to power, envision a future that doesn't seem logical in the face of your circumstances at the time, were all based on her decision to step back and let me be me, whatever that meant. She raised me right in the way that the best way that she knew how. And so I told her that. I hugged her. I said, "Mom, you need to know you were a good mom." And then she got another burst of focus, and she looks at me and she says, we also should talk about your father. I want to tell him about you, and I want to tell you about him. And my brain sort of tuned everything out, and I started thinking to myself, do you like who you are as a person? And the answer was yes. And if that's true, then what use is going down this road in this moment? And I didn't have a good answer for that. And so I told her, "Mom, I don't want to know. I don't want you thinking about this anymore. Let's not talk about it." And she smiled a little bit. She hugged me, and we left it at that and never talked about it again. And so we finished the hospice paperwork and started that process, and she deteriorated pretty quickly. Like I said, her cancer was aggressive. Due to some issues with her medication, our old friend, schizoaffective disorder, Fred Durst, came back. And so over the next 10 weeks, we lost her mind before we lost her body, but I did get to spend some time with her and have more conversations with her. And I'm very thankful for that. And the last time I saw her, I went to home that she was at. And I happened to get there early, like beat traffic. And this was at a point where she wasn't able to, like she couldn't, I guess the word is self-aspirate. So like if she coughed, she couldn't actually get it out. And so I happened to walk into the room as she was choking on something. And so I tilted her head so she wouldn't drown effectively. And I sat down and we talked about a lot of nothing. And I'm thankful to say that one of the last things that she ever said to me was, "You tell that sexy motherfucker Sam Elliott to call me." And so Sam Elliott, my mom, says hi.
My favorite part of that story, of Thomas's story, was when his mom has lost her hair due to chemo, and she pulls his head next to hers and says that we're both bald, but in the funniest way. I mean, just, yeah, it's a testament to her resiliency and also where he got his incredible sense of humor. He's very funny.
Great storyteller and a great human being.
Yep. Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. We want to thank WYPR for housing our podcast and for giving us this very lovely studio space to record it in. We want to thank Maureen Harvey, who is a patient guide for us and producer. And if you want to hear all of our past shows, we have 4,700, which is stories, not shows, but you know, it's a lot.
So if you have lots and lots and lots and lots of free time,
you can take a listen at our website, stoopstorytelling.com, and you can find past shows, and you can submit for stories for future shows, and you can purchase tickets for all upcoming events. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.